Next case on our calendar, 04817 Cleveland Bar Association versus Comp Management, Inc. Mr. Willacy.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Aubrey Willacy, and it is my pleasure today to stand in representation of the 4,600 members of the Cleveland Bar Association in this matter. To go straight to the end, what we want this court to affirm the determination made on May 18th by the Board of Commissioners of the Unauthorized Practice of Law with regard to respondents Comp Management, Inc., also known as CMI, and Bobby Joe Christensen. We ask this court to modify that part of the board's determination, which was made as to respondents Wagner and Bossert, the president and CEO, respectively, of CMI, by holding them equally culpable and responsible, both in terms of injunction and monetarily with CMI, and to impose a civil penalty in the highest amount authorized by this court's rules against CMI and respondents Wagner and Bossert for each and every violation which those respondents are responsible for committing in the interim between the board's May 18th, 2004 decision and the date this court enters judgment. I believe that by so restricting the time frame of the penalty order which this court, we request, enter, this court would avoid any of the constitutional problems which opposing counsel so fervently laid forth in their brief. The personal liability point, which I avert to, was adequately and we submit exhaustively briefed by the parties under both Ohio and federal law. I really have no further comments of great substance to add to those comments that were set forth in the brief, except a couple of points. I would reiterate to this court what Justice Wright so eloquently said in State versus Seacoast International, Inc., 38 Ohio State, 3rd, 120 at page 121. The modern corporation is nearly omnipresent in American society. Yet, legal sanctions on corporate criminal activity are difficult to enforce because a corporation is but an intangible, ethereal being created by the state. Its actions affect employees, assets, the economy, and finally society, yet it remains, in Lord Thurlow's words, a being that, quote, has no soul to be damned and no body to be kicked.
Counsel, what is the Cleveland Bar Association's position on the 1970 agreement and the recent update? Do you maintain that the agreement itself is okay and they just went outside the terms of the agreement, or are you disputing that the agreement itself is should be, it, or actually constitutes the unauthorized practice of law?
Justice Stratton, number one, to use the term agreement, I think, is a misnomer, because as far as I know, the Unauthorized Practice of Law Committee of the Ohio State Bar Association back in 1970 did not have the power to bind that association in contract. Nonetheless, we can agree for purposes of today's discussion, as has historically been done, to refer to that document as an agreement. The Bar Association, the Cleveland Bar Association's position with regard to that agreement is, number one, it was not made with the approval or the authority of this court being the sole body in this state which has the power to regulate the practice of law and to admit people to its practice. Number two, the agreement is quite frankly contrary to Canon 3 of the Code of Professional Responsibility. The agreement, just as its June second, I believe it is, 2004 revision, infringes, as I have briefed, upon the statutory authority reposed pursuant to the Ohio Constitution in the Director of Insurance and the Secretary of Commerce, if I remember correctly, with regard to the practice of the profession of private investigation and the profession regarded as or statutorily termed the practice of being an administrator, third-party administrator being included in that term by rule.
So you would have us invalidate, or whatever term you want to use, the original and the current updated version?
There is nothing to invalidate, Justice Stratton.
We have a whole lot of parties in this state operating under it, so what would you want us to say about it? That it's not valid, it's not binding, it is the practice of law, they can't do that? What statement would you want us to make as your position?
Your last two questions to me would be, I would respond to by saying yes, period. It is the practice of law, and they cannot do that. The agreement, no, it was not binding. It never has been binding because it was made without lawful authority.
So I have the same question that Justice Stratton had. What, under the new resolution of the most recent resolution of the commission, which purports to get its spirit at least from the 1970 agreement, what authorized conduct in that resolution would you say is the practice of law? I guess I'm wondering what specifically have the parties done here, the individuals done here, that conflicts with the resolution?
Are you asking me with regard to what they say they do or what they were caught doing?
What the record shows.
What the record shows.
That's what we have.
The record in this case, Mr. Chief Justice, shows that Comp Management, Inc. certainly participated in the negotiation of settlement agreements between claimants and employers, the employers being its so-called clients. That, under this court's holdings, is the unauthorized practice of law for a non-lawyer to do that. The record in this case further shows that Comp Management, through its employees, appeared in a representational capacity in behalf of others at oral adjudicative hearings in front of the Industrial Commission of Ohio, appearing at adjudicative hearings in front of an administrative agency in behalf of a party other than yourself, who is a party in interest at such a hearing, is the practice of law.
Well, you could be there to give comfort, or you could be there to argue a legal issue to the commission.
Or you could be there, as the 1970 agreement suggests, to sit and take notes and observe, point out facts that are within your own personal knowledge, and point out evidence in the file without comment. That's not this case. That is not why we filed this lawsuit, nor what we caught them doing.
Well, I guess that's what I'm wondering is whether, just one follow-up. I'm wondering, reading all the briefs and the material here, Are we concerned about Comp Management exceeding the usual practice by representatives, or are we concerned about Comp Management representing and its conduct about which you complain and our board obviously recommended that they represent, that their conduct is typical of what all representatives do, or is Comp Management here sort of out of the playground, so to speak? Are they not playing by the rules?
A one-word answer to your question, Mr. Chief Justice, is both, but that is not the manner in which this case was brought. The inclusion of the entirety of the actuarial services industry, the so-called TPA industry in the state of Ohio, was not made by the Cleveland Bar Association. That we owe to respondents who, by way of exaggerating before the board the scope of the complaint that was before the board, as brought by the Cleveland Bar Association, briefed to the board that we were bringing this action against an entire industry. We were not. But if that be the case because the entire industry engages in identical conduct, then so be it.
That will be the effect of our decision if we were to rule as you ask.
I would hope so.
But I have a more basic question or comment regarding is appearing at an administrative hearing really involving the practice of law? It's not a court, an administrative agency.
Justice Stratton, at my age, having been in practice for 33
resident.
Years, I'm sorry, Justice Resnick, at my age, having been in practice for 33 years, my memory is not perfect, but I don't recall you as being among the dissenters in Columbus Bar Association versus Smith when Mr. Smith's 7-day suspended jail term was revoked and he was committed to, I believe it was the Franklin, was it the Franklin County Jail or was it the City of Columbus Jail? For contempt of this court's order that he should not practice law during the period of a suspension when he went before the Columbus Taxi Cab Commission. If he practiced law by so doing and did so without a valid license, I submit to you that appearing at workers' compensation hearings where what is at stake is perhaps permanent total disability benefits, death claim awards, scheduled loss of member awards to people who have lost one leg, two legs, or who claimed that they got that as the result of an injury occurring in the course of and arising out of employment. Those things are far different from the degree of economic stake, I would submit, that you would see in front of the Columbus Taxi Cab Commission. Yet Mr. Smith, as far as I know from the records of this court, had to do 7 days in jail because he did that on one occasion. According to what opposing counsel told us during the Board of Commissioners hearing, comp management does this on at the rate of $100,000 a year.
Mr. Willsey, I'm having difficulty trying to figure out exactly what you're asking the court. Are you complaining that CMI acted in a representative capacity outside of the bounds of the 1970 agreement? Or are you saying that by acting within the agreement, they are still engaged in the unauthorized practice of law?
Both. Need I explain further?
Well, I think you should.
Yes. The agreement, as I said before in my earlier comments, the agreement itself permits the unauthorized practice of law. So that by conforming to the agreement, and taking it to the limits, not Ms. Beth Whedon's limits, but the limits that are on the paper of the 1970 agreement, a non-lawyer will violate the constraints against the unauthorized practice of law. That is not why.
Are you saying then that a member of CMI it does not have a right to attend a hearing?
I'm not saying to attend a hearing. I'm saying to determine, make the determination of what evidence in the file is pertinent to the issue and point that evidence out to the hearing officer in behalf of another. Now, I can give you one great example. It's a very personal example, and it is reflected in the record of this case as to why non-lawyers should not be permitted to engage even in workers' compensation. This court, I stood before this court in the old courthouse, so to speak, in January of this year, and I argued the case of Arth Brass and Aluminum Castings versus Conrad. That was January. We still have no decision on that case. This is now August. But my point is, that case came straight out of actuarial practice. Yet it is fraught, as I am sure you now know, with constitutional implications and exceptionally intricate questions of statutory interpretations. Yet it was a simple actuarial question of when was the doctor entitled to be paid? Under the statute and under the rules of the Bureau. Are the rules of the Bureau in conflict with the statutes in Chapter 41, 23 and 126 of the Ohio Revised Code? This is not stuff to entrust to actuarial service companies or their representatives. But I submit to the court, Justice O'Donnell and all of you, we need not go down the line of these esoteric questions that you're raising about what is and what is not the practice of law. Aside from the fact that that's been well defined, Comp Management Inc. is a corporation. This court decided back in 1933 and 1934 in the land title and abstract case and in the Judd case that what? Corporation can't practice law and that a corporation cannot, by employing attorneys who are licensed to practice law, engage in the practice of law. That point is unrebutted in this case, that Comp Management practice law in that context. It's a corporation. It can't go into tribunals representing people. I see that I have now 33 seconds or so left. I'd like to save what little of my time I have for a rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Willsey. Mr. Kincaid.
May it please the court, I'd like to reserve a minute for rebuttal, and Mr. Gotchel, who's representing Bobby Joe Christensen, one of the respondents, and I are splitting time 11 minutes, yes. 2 minutes.
Okay.
May it please the court, my name is Robert Kincaid. Along with Beth McNelly, she and I represented Comp Management Inc. and its respondents Bob Bosser and John Wagner in this case. There are four issues that I'd like to discuss with you this morning. One is the public interest that is at stake in this UPL issue. The second is the harm to the public if non-lawyer representation is not restricted. The third is harm to the public if non-lawyer representation is restricted. And the fourth is the interplay between the 1970 agreement and the Industrial Commission resolution.
Counsel, before you get into your four points, there are a whole bunch of amicus briefs here. And it seems that everyone else except your client acknowledges this is, in fact, the practice of law. That is, people on your side,
yes,
of the issue. But your client steadfastly argues it's not.
Your Honor, these questions have been phrased as whether or not this is the unauthorized practice of law, whether or not it's the practice of law that has been authorized. I'm not sure at this stage.
Well, we have to decide is what's going on before these commissions a practice of law or not. If it's not the practice of law, your client doesn't have a problem.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But everybody else on your side says it is the practice of law.
What goes on in front of these commissions is a mixture of the practice of law and the specialized work done by a layman, comp management, and also those in the industry. And that is precisely what the Industrial Commission Resolution 4-01 tries to demarcate. There was no intent in that resolution to usurp the power of this court to determine what is or what is not the practice of law. The intent of that resolution, and it's indicated in the body of the resolution, is to provide a workable system pending this court's determination of this specific case. The Industrial Commission resolution resulted from claimants' lawyers getting together, labor getting together, the Ohio Chamber getting together, the Council of Retail Merchants, Defense Counsel, representatives from the Bureau of Workers' Comp and the Industrial Commission, and even the Ohio Attorney General's Office, to try to determine what, within a workers' comp context, requires professional judgment and professional skill, and therefore would be the practice of law, and what does not require professional judgment and professional skill and would not be the practice of law. That resolution basically takes the 1970 agreement and updates the 1970 agreement over the past 34 years. What, in my view, that resolution does is it provides this court with a sort of industry analysis of the Woodman elements in terms of the practice of law, balancing the skill involved, whether or not professional judgment is exercised, the harm to the public, and whether or not a record is created on appeal.
But part of the allegation is that your client has examined and cross-examined witnesses before that body, interpreted case law, signed pleadings, and engaged in things outside of even the bounds of that agreement.
The problem with that is that those are outcome determinative characteristics of what we do.
Do you think it's permissible for a corporation to have an agent cross-examine witnesses before a tribunal?
I do not believe it's appropriate to cross-examine before a tribunal, and we do not do that. That's what I meant when I said it was outcome determinative. As soon as you cross-examine, we have an idea that what we're talking about is cross-examination as Francis Wellman saw it. Cross-examination in this record is indicated as identifying a document that may not be in the file to the hearing officer so that that can be included in the order of the hearing officer. That, the Cleveland Bar Association has alleged, is cross-examination. They have alleged that preparing, completing a C form in front of, that the Industrial Commission prescribes, completing that, checking it, and sending it into the Industrial Commission is the drafting of pleadings, which constitutes the unauthorized practice of law. And it's those types of things, and this gets back to your question, Justice Pfeiffer, that the Industrial Commission resolution attempts to identify.
Well, I have my own take on the most recent thing, which was, I think, a quick emergency effort to allow things to go on until this court spoke. I don't think a lot of folks are advocating, well, this is the tablet that Moses brought down from the mountain. It doesn't seem to me to be that. I think it was an effort to do a quick fix to have things go on and not have a parade of horribles that we kept reading about in the newspaper in the meantime. But let me ask you this. My reading of what's argued before us is not that your client was cross-examining, but that your client was instead telling the hearing examiner, here's the questions you ought to ask.
That's been referred to in the briefs, Justice, as indirect cross-examination.
Well, what would you call it? Well, you give it a name.
What it is,
just helpful hints.
What it is advising the hearing officer of an issue that should be brought to his or her attention for incorporation into the final order. These are not adversarial proceedings. We are not.
I understand
that. We are not trying to undercut the credibility of a witness. We're not trying to impeach a witness. All we're trying to do, through one comment, is bring to the attention of the hearing officer if there's any kind of factual discrepancy that he or she ought to be aware of before they make the final decision.
Let me ask you something that doesn't pertain directly to your client, but your client's activities have precipitated this action by the Cleveland Bar Association, so now we're in it up to our eyeballs, and we have to provide a global answer to it. Is it different for an injured worker who is not a corporation to bring a union rep along who assists by whispering in the ear to the injured worker, here's what you need to do, or here's what you need to ask, or whatever. In other words, as long as the union rep didn't actively take part, but merely sat there and held hands with and helped indirectly a pro se party. That's a different problem, is it not, than the corporation?
It's a different, the representational problem probably still exists in both senses, But the AFL-CIO filed an amicus brief in this case principally because it views and we view their position almost identically to the third-party administrators generally.
So you don't think there are any differences or any greater problems for a corporation in terms of the involvement in the hearing?
I do not. In terms of third-party administrators, hearing room attendance is really a fraction of what we do on an ongoing basis. I mean, there are short-term and long-term disability programs, claims
sure.
management programs.
But it's that hearing room appearance that's causing the problem that we're
having. It's not only the hearing room appearance that's causing the problem. The Cleveland Bar Association is alleging that even making a decision to object to a claim is the unauthorized practice of law. The extent of this decision would place every activity that's done in the Industrial Commission from filing a claim, filing an objection to a claim, filing a request for a continuance, negotiating a settlement and reducing that to present value, as actuarials do, as the unauthorized practice of law. The entire gamut of the workers' comp and Bureau of Workers' Comp and Industrial Commission is being challenged by the Cleveland Bar Association as the unauthorized practice of law in this
case. Well, counsel, I can envision a world in which the sky doesn't entirely fall and you still don't have corporations and non-lawyers practicing law. Many of these things which you mentioned can be prepared and submitted just like a memorandum to the actual employer who reviews it. In other words, instead of just being directly acting, you act indirectly. You provide certain services, certainly the actuarial services and others, to the business in question.
Under this
decision. And they sign it. They execute it, they file it, whatever.
If in fact, Justice Pfeiffer, this is the practice of law, then that corporation cannot represent itself in an Industrial Commission proceeding. It cannot file its own claim. It cannot file or its own objection to claim. It's in no different position than any other entity. That's a representation.
Well, you mean a lawyer would have to sign it, yes.
That corporation, in order to participate at all in the workers' comp and in the Bureau of Workers' Comp or Industrial Commission.
Well, you have a whole series of cases in the tax arena where this problem has come up as well.
Well, that's correct.
And we've required lawyers to act.
But one of the reasons that I think this case
on behalf of the corporation.
One of the reasons I think this case is distinguishable from that is that records are being made for appeal at the board in the Sharon Village and the Worthington board tax cases. There is no record that's being made for appeal here. It's a de novo proceeding all the way through the Industrial Commission and all the way through Common Pleas Court, except for the limited mandamus actions that are filed. And this court can take judicial notice, in about 0.1% of all of the cases that are filed. I'd like to address, if I may, Your Honor, just briefly, the public harm issue involved in this case. Number one, there has been absolutely no evidence presented by the Cleveland Bar Association of any harm to the public.
I guess the Hines case, which is the Cleveland Bar Association claims we've overruled, at least by implication, gave some birth, I guess, to even though someone may appear to be engaged in the practice of law, that we look at the harm to people being represented and sort of a holistic approach. How would you have us apply that here? And do you think we should use Hines as a way to reach your result or not?
I think Hines is precisely on point with this case. I think one of the differences is that more outcome determinative conduct, more practice of law occurs at the, and that's the record in this case, at Bureau of Employment Services cases than occurs in the Industrial Commission. One of the reasons that we as an industry, that comp management as an industry, is unconcerned about whether it doesn't make any difference to this industry whether or not there is the right to, quote, cross-examine in the hearing room. That's not our function. All we want to make sure is clear is that we have the ability to comment on the records in the file that the hearing officer has and that both parties to the proceeding have. We do not want
so,
to engage
so you don't want to
cross-examine
it, but you want to argue the case.
We don't want to argue the case. Not at all. All we want to do are point out facts to the hearing officer that the officer should include in its opinion. In the resolution recently adopted by the Industrial Commission, argument is not something that's acceptable conduct. It requires professional judgment, as does direct examination, as does cross-examination, as does citing the case law or filing briefs or making legal arguments.
And the Attorney General filed a brief, says they're neutral, but urges us to just fall in line with that new resolution. I was more interested in the amicus of the Federal Trade Commission, where they said competition from non-lawyers is good for the country. Maybe a lot of the public has that view, but that seemed to be a relatively unhelpful statement in terms of delineating what is and isn't the practice of law.
Your Honor, as I read that brief, I don't believe the Industrial Commission is advocating competition with attorneys and non-attorneys in an area where professional judgment is required, because that's clearly the practice of law. But in an area like workers' compensation, with respect to the activities that the third-party administrators do, that's where the Trade Commission is saying that competition provides the ability and gives the Ohio consumer a choice. And what it does is it holds down prices, which are very significant in this case, because if one of the potential economic harms to the public is the increased cost to the Bureau of Workers' Comp system and the taxpayers of the state of Ohio. And that's with respect to an already extremely successful, economically successful system. Just briefly, with respect to the harm, the harm issue, as I see it, and as this court has held in Woodman, is a significant issue in the analysis of whether or not any individual or entity is engaged in the unauthorized practice of law. There has been no evidence of harm presented by the Cleveland Bar Association, no evidence in this record concerning harm to the public. The only evidence in this record is that the public, in this case, with third-party administrators, sophisticated employers who are able to make intelligent business decisions and who are able to utilize actuarial companies, they're able to understand when they have to hire an attorney, and they do that on a regular basis. With respect to harm to the public, if practice is prohibited or restricted, if lay practice as it has existed since 1970 and certainly since Goodman in 1934 is restricted, there's an economic harm that has been briefed. Two, there is a harm to employers who will be forced to hire a lawyer to participate in the workers' comp system in any way, shape, or form unless they employ in-house counsel. And I think there's a perception of harm with respect to the public's perception of the bar and whether or not confidence in the bar will be undermined. And the reason I say that is because there has been what I think is a singular concurrence here of labor, claimants' attorneys, business
you need to sum up, Mr. Kincaid.
Defense attorneys who are in favor of making the distinctions with respect to what is and what is not the unauthorized practice of law, and to provide it to this court for its consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gottschall, I know that Mr. Kincaid impeded on your time. We let him. So you have a discrete split of time. So take 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
If it please the court, learned counsel, I am Douglas Godshall of the firm of Hannah Campbell and Powell, and I'm pleased to be here to bring to your attention the case of Bobby Jo Christensen, this fine woman who finds herself in the middle of this maelstrom between the third-party administrators and the Cleveland Bar Association through no conduct of her own.
I wasn't real clear. The board recommendation to us includes the conclusion that CMI's preparation, signing, and filing of documents and handling claims with the commission, so forth, amounts to the unauthorized practice of the law. Insufficient evidence is presented to find that conduct of any of the individual respondents constitute the unauthorized practice of law in this regard. Some person had to fill out those forms, didn't they? A corporation doesn't just
And you fill out the forms by putting a check mark or an X mark in them.
What does that recommendation mean, do you think? They're not represented here, obviously, but I'm quite sure.
I don't know what that means.
Okay.
I've read that many times. Your Honors, Bobby Jo Christensen is a woman who learned by the rules and played by the rules. Her first employment in this area was at the Industrial Commission, where she helped hearing officers, who, as you know, are all lawyers, prepare files. She then moved to the private sector for comp management and worked as a hearing representative. She knew the 1970 rules. She knew that what she was supposed to examine witnesses, cross-examine witnesses, or some. She states that at page 580 of the transcript. She knew what the rules were. She didn't have to be educated. No one in the system complained about her. The Industrial Commission, which is, as you all know, is composed of three commissioners, two of which are not lawyers, none of those individuals complained about
her. But isn't the issue really is whether she was practicing law, isn't it? That if somebody doesn't complain, that doesn't mean they aren't practicing law. It doesn't mean they aren't engaged in conduct they shouldn't engage in.
I agree, Your Honor. That's the issue. But the Unauthorized Practice of Law Committee of the Ohio State Bar Association, which promulgated these rules, they didn't complain. I think it is an issue as to the fact of the matter is that there were no complaints registered against her in the system until she received the papers naming her as a respondent. I mean, to the extent that the Cleveland Bar thinks that these people are practicing law, why didn't they go to the Industrial Commission and make an informal complaint, say your whole system stinks? They picked out this one lady to do it.
Do you say that if there's no complaint, then an illegal act is okay to do?
No, we have briefed the fact that when she has acted in good faith upon reliance of the advice of others, on the reliance of the agreement in 1970, should not be found guilty.
You're arguing that if no one complains, then it's okay to go ahead and do it.
No, I'm not saying that, Your Honor. I'm not saying.
What are you saying?
I am saying that if no one complains, she didn't have an opportunity to remedy her behavior. How was she supposed to know her behavior was wrong when lawyers such as hearing officers were observing her on a daily basis? The effect of upholding the relator's position that if you have a file in front of you and wish to point out a medical record, the Cleveland Bar Association says that's examination or cross-examination, and it's the practice of law. That means the hearing rep can't even point to a record, that the union rep can't say, by the way, this was, you know, there was another injury in this case too. They can't point that out. And if someone advises of the date of the first report of injury, the FROI, under the Cleveland Bar's analysis, that's the practice of law because you're giving us an opinion on the statute of limitations. It completely, completely strips the hearing representative from any role whatsoever because it determines, Cleveland Bar determinations, that determines that this is the practice of law, which it is not.
You need to sum up, Mr. Gutchen.
Thank you, Your Honor. Simply because a surgical technician stitches my son's face in a hospital doesn't make that lady a doctor. Simply because a seasonal employee at H&R Block does a tax return doesn't make that person an accountant. The system at the Industrial Commission for the last 60 years has worked. It's allowed lay witnesses and lay representatives to move the system and to help injured parties get their money faster. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Willisey, you've saved 42 seconds, but I've given respondents considerably more time, so take 3 minutes. Start with three.
Thank
minutes.
You, Your Honor.
Counsel, you had a rather novel argument that even advising your client to get a lawyer for a particular issue is the practice of law. What is your authority for that charge?
The authority is cited in the Board of Commissioners decision, the May 18th decision. I don't remember it off the top of my head. It was cited to the board by myself in our brief from decisions of this court. It's not some made up or fancied point. If you will refer to that part of our brief in which I ran through the enumeration of cases that supported the various activities being constituting the unauthorized practice of law, you'll see them. But from the top of my head, I cannot give you the citation.
So your argument is even if you go to an accountant, the accountant says you need a lawyer for this, he's practicing law.
That's not the point. The point is that
that's pretty much what you said.
I'm sorry?
That's pretty much what you said, that telling your client you need a lawyer is the practice of law.
I did not say that, ma'am. What I was saying is this. You have to take the whole relationship into account. The relationship initially starts off as one in which corporations such as COP Management say, we can handle your entire workers' compensation needs, as well as your employment law needs, as well as your unemployment compensation needs. And then proceed to say, we've got this claim under control, we've got that claim under control, and you don't need to hire a lawyer for this one, even though it's a death claim or it's an OD claim, occupational disease, or whatever it might be. The information, the informing of a person under those circumstances, be that person an individual as a proprietor of a business or a proprietor in the form of a corporation of a business, we submit a comp management should not be the person making the determination whether you do or do not need an attorney for this particular matter. The board, following this court's precedent, agreed with us on that. I'd like to, in response to some of the points that were asserted by opposing counsel, point out a couple of things. The Cleveland Bar Association does not call cross-examination pointing out a piece of paper to a hearing officer. That is not the cross-examination that the record in this matter shows, nor the cross-examination about which we have written and spoken. Cross-examination was, in fact, if you'll read the Whedon transcript, which I believe is in the appendix to our brief, that's CMI's sole videotaped training mechanism on the topic of unauthorized practice of law, in which Beth Whedon of Columbus, as I understand it, told them, I'm not going to tell you to stop, just keep on doing what you're doing, push the envelope, as long as you can get away with it, it's fine. What we talk about, I don't know about the other side, but when we talk about hearing reps engaging in cross-examination, is they're doing so directly, as some of the people in attendance, some of the CMI hearing reps in attendance during that training session in front of Beth Whedon confessed to doing, and doing what Mr. Wagner confessed and explained to us when I took his deposition, they termed indirect cross-examination, a term of art within their industry, which is you, as the non-licensed hearing rep, form a question in your mind. You want to ask that claimant, didn't you have 6 auto accidents before this one and injure your back? But you can't ask that claimant that question directly by way of cross-examination. So you turn to the hearing officer and say, Mr. Attorney, hearing officer, the employer would like to know if this claimant had 6 auto accidents and back injuries prior to the one that he's talking about where he just said he'd never hurt his back before. Mr. Wagner, if you asked him, he's sitting right here over my left shoulder, would tell you that that's exactly what indirect cross-examination is, and that's what the Board of Commissioners stung CMI for on that point. It is not handing the hearing officer a piece of paper, and I suggest that counsel, in suggesting to you that that's what we were talking about, was exaggerating. Records are not being made for appeal, Mr. Kincaid tells you. False. All this court has to do is read its own decisions in Lewis versus Trimble and State X Rel Quarto Mining Company versus Industrial Commission. I need not go any further than cite those cases to you. They are found at page 6 of Relator's answer brief in this matter.
You have 30 more seconds. Mr.
Thank you. What goes on in front of these commissions is a mixture of the practice of law and what is not the practice of law. The Cleveland Bar Association respectfully disagrees, and Bobby Joe Christensen was not just somehow mysteriously targeted out of the air. I caught her personally making an oral argument that was so loud that I heard it out in the waiting area from the hearing room in which she was, about 30 feet away. Never seen her before in my life, asked her opposing counsel who she was, and he said, Bobby Joe Christensen. He turned out to have given me the right name. That's why she's here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Willacy. Mr. Kincaid, you have rebuttal on your, and Mr. Gottschall, on your objections. Take 30 seconds. If you wish, you don't have to.
Are you talking about my rebuttal to Mr. Willis's objections?
Yes.
Okay. Just briefly, Mr. Willis, he has asked this court to modify the decision of the board with respect to Mr. Bossert and Mr. Wagner. There is no basis to challenge the finding of the board here. The rule is clear. The case either needs to be dismissed by the board or it needs to be remanded to the Cleveland Bar Association for further investigation. It was not remanded for further investigation. By implication, it was dismissed. The reason it came up here was because there were UPL findings against the company itself. Neither Mr. Bossert nor Mr. Wagner are properly before this court with respect to the UPL decision. The rest of what I have to say relative to them personally has been briefed.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.